This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. Eye on College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, sub above. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, be Brandon Davies. It's Selection Sunday. Smash the like button. You have consent. Don't forget while you're here to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel if you ain't done that already. Let's get into it. 68-team bracket for the 2024 NCAA tournament. It's set. Adam Zucker unveiled it on CBS. It's America's most watched network, Network of Stars. I've been talking about it on CBS Sports Network all night. Deadleg been talking about it all night, CBS Sports HQ. Now we're here, and Deadleg, let's just start right at the top. The number one seeds are UConn in the East, Purdue in the Midwest, Houston in the South, North Carolina in the West. Do you have any issues with the number one seeds? Because I do.
I know you do. I might just tee you right back up because I had the one seeds right. You did not. And I know you're going to be angry with the selection committee. So, no, I have no issues with the one seeds. What I do have an issue with is Iowa State being the last two seed. And, you know, listen, just so everyone gets a heads up on something here. We are going to be giving you so much pod content that we're going to every possible angle you could want on this bracket. We're going to be giving to you. We're going to have the show tonight. Then Parrish and I are going to be on CBS Sports Network with the pod Monday and Tuesday at 2 Eastern. Those episodes are also going in your feed. And then we've got an extravaganza episode coming Wednesday. So we're going to get into plenty tonight. But if you're hoping we get into certain things and we don't, rest assured, they are very much coming. So with that in mind, Iowa State as the last two is vexing to me, and especially after they destroyed Houston. And I did interview the chair. Frankly, GP, it's been a marathon 4 days. I like half remember what he told me and what he didn't. I did ask him about Iowa State. I don't remember what he said to me because I was sure I had people in my ear. I don't – any explanation tossed out there for Iowa State to be the final two seed, you will never convince me that it's legitimate. I actually do think – this is probably the worst seeding job in the past four tournaments or so. I remember the past 2 years, I've sat in this room and talked to you, and we've been like, hey, for the most part, like, selection was pretty good, a couple seeds. Not this year. Oh, we're back to our old ways, baby. All over the place. Are you kidding me? We'll stick with the top ones, though. I don't have an issue with UNC as a one. I predicted it would be the final one seed. Iowa State's the two, and it's the last two. The floor is yours, sir.
I always knew North Carolina had a chance to be the fourth number one seed. And I mean, even as the selection show approached, I understood that there was a chance North Carolina would get it. In fact, perhaps a better than not chance that North Carolina would get it. And I understood exactly why. I just think it's wrong. That's it. I understand it. I just think it's totally wrong. You're right. I listened to the committee chair discuss Iowa State. He did it with Adam Zucker and Jay Wright and Wally Zerbiak and Seth Davis, Clark Kellogg. You know, we all talked to, we were all in studio tonight. We all talked to a million people. I'm confused on even who was there, but he didn't answer the question, not sensibly, because there's no sensible explanation for it. Like if you want to say Iowa State's not the fourth number one seed for whatever reason, fine. But Iowa State has the fourth best resume in the sport. And the idea that you would knock them all the way down to eighth and put them in UConn's region? Like, UConn's the number one overall seed. You shouldn't have a team that's got the fourth best resume sitting in your region with you. And just to run through it real quick so people understand, Iowa State and North Carolina have the exact same record, all right? Then you start digging into these records, and this is where you find the differences. Iowa State is 10-6 in quadrant one, 6-1 in quadrant two, 11-0 in quadrant three and quadrant four. Carolina, 9-3 in quadrant one, 7-4 in quadrant two, 11-0 in quadrant three, quadrant four. So Iowa State's got one more quadrant one win than North Carolina, three fewer losses outside of quadrant one than North Carolina. They're higher than North Carolina in the net at KenPom, at Torvik. And Iowa State is also the only team besides UConn, Purdue, and Houston to have more than nine quadrant one wins and less than eight total losses. Still, the Cyclones get punished and made to be the last number two seed because I'm assuming, because this was always the explanation anybody else would give you for it, because of a non-league strength of schedule that ranks in the 300s. I understand non-league strength of schedule is a part of the selection process. I have no idea why it is, because it shouldn't be, particularly when it's used in this way. I understand what happened. It's just ridiculous what happened. The selection process shouldn't be about rewarding anybody for, quote, trying something, for trying to schedule aggressively. It shouldn't be about punishing people for not trying something. You know what it should be about? Rewarding accomplishments. That's it. I don't care how you tried to schedule in your non-league or didn't try to schedule. I only care about what did you do and what did you not do once the season began. And if you've clearly put together a body of work that's elite and impressive, why should your non-league strength of schedule matter to the selection committee? In fact, that's not a rhetorical question. That's a question for you, because I know you and I differ on this a little bit. Mm-hmm. When you are looking at Iowa State's body of work and you go, my God, they've got 10 quadrant one wins. They're the only team besides the three other number one seeds that were obvious to have that many quadrant one wins and fewer than eight losses. They're ahead of the fourth number one seed in the net, Torvik, KenPom, but you know, this non-league strength of schedule doesn't look so good. Why should that be something that kicks Iowa State all the way down to eighth in line?
Because the committee has forever rewarded the teams that have sought out to challenge themselves more in the non-conference with the idea that that would, you know, I think benefit their resume, but also work toward the greater good. And it gives you, this is why Michigan State's a nine, which is a joke. And I also, and I'm answering the question, but I said this about an hour before we actually got to the bracket. I did anticipate, because the bubble was so wonky, that we would have contradictory things in the bracket in terms of, well, this team's non-con SOS was this and this team, and those things don't align. That was going to be inevitable because of the way that the voting process happens and when they go through these seed scrubs, and different people are going to have different priorities and all that. But even I was stunned to see just how misaligned some of these philosophies were. Iowa State in the non-conference, it beat Iowa at home, beat VCU on a neutral, and that's just about it. North Carolina, which did take losses, oh, by the way, to Villanova, UConn, and Kentucky, all on neutrals, it did beat Tennessee. It beat Oklahoma, which missed, oh, by the way. I don't think there's actually a great wide gulf in that. And as you're running down the stats, GP, I don't know if you said this or not. And we would side on this issue. Like I said it last week, so we don't have, you know, forever on this pod tonight. If the committee wants to do it, I actually think it's a net positive for the sport to do this. But in Iowa State's case, I disagree, because Iowa State wound up playing in a league that was so good and so strong that its overall strength of schedule made the non-con part of it moot. Iowa State was 16 and UNC was 31. So UNC got dragged down a little bit by the ACC. Iowa State got way boosted up by the Big 12 and improved it. I mean, to me, the thing that bothers me is I understand it's just one data point, but like Iowa State destroyed Houston at a level that we did not think conceivable prior to that Big 12 championship game on Saturday. And I, again, let me reinforce this. I understand it's just one data point in the entire season. And it's not that big, but I will not be convinced that after seeing what Iowa State did to clinch its season, that it winds up in the two. And then the byproduct of all this is that GP, the East is freaking loaded, dude. UConn, the best team in the country, gets the, in my opinion, the best two. UConn's the, I mean, Iowa State's the best two. Then it gets Auburn as a four, and the reason why Auburn was the four is because it lacked the quad one wins, but it's a top five team at KenPom. You've got them, you've got BYU, which has been a top 15 team all season long in the metrics. Illinois looking as dangerous as any team on the three line right now. Iowa State the best two. An FAU team that has Final Four experience potentially waiting for you in the second round. I don't think there's any case to be made against the East and its strength overall. And the bracketing principles that were in play here, I said it early in the show on Sunday on HQ. I would love to truly know when they get this final bracket, if everyone takes a beat, steps back, everyone just like looks at the bracket, everyone in the room, shut up. Everyone just look at this for 5 minutes. Okay. Then convene and say, does this make sense? Do we really want to put the best team in the tournament, the number one overall seed with the number two team? That's a top five team in predictive metrics with a team on the four line. That's a top five team in predictive metrics with a team on the three line that won its conference tournament and is operating as a borderline top 10 team. It's just a little too tilted, and particularly on that side, GP, because you got the East and then you got the West, which just happens to be the weakest. So those are my thoughts on Iowa State one seed, two seed conversation overall.
You are right. What you said at the top of this is that we typically come on here and we say, hey, listen, you know, I could nitpick this, nitpick that. But broadly speaking, I think they did a pretty good job. And picking the teams, I should be clear, I think they did a pretty good job. I got 66 of 68 for whatever that's worth. Jerry Palm also got 66 of 68. I think once the bubble shrank, and the committee chair did make it clear, we had five bid stealers. He called New Mexico a bid stealer. So
outrageous, by the way, that New Mexico.
By the way, outrageous. Yes, of course.
Insane. What I don't want to do on this pod is spend 20 minutes bitching about the seeds. But let me just roll this real quick because I got it on my sheet here, man. Dude, I can't remember the last time. And apologies that this mic isn't working the right way. I can't remember the last time I had this many issues with seeds. I'm just going to roll through them here. FAU as an 8 is an absolute joke, just the same way that MSU is a 9 is a joke. These teams have no business being on this line whatsoever. Did they not watch FAU the final 2 weeks of the season? So here are my issues. FAU is an 8. Duquesne is an 11, but I think I get why that actually had to happen for seeding and bracket purposes, because BYU got dropped to a 6 instead of a 5 because it can't play on Sundays and all that. Michigan State is a 9. New Mexico as an 11 is... it actually like damages the committee's credibility that you would put that team on the 11 line. Dayton has a 7, a little too high. JMU is a 12. Get that nonsense out of my face. At worst, an 11. Boise State going to Dayton. I will never understand the fact that the Mountain West sent two, and that's in our poll. Vote on it, and we'll give you results here later in the show. Two teams from the Mountain West going to Dayton. Colorado State and Boise State have no business being on the 10 line, but being that far down. And then Utah State has an 8. Real issues with what the committee did with the Mountain West. The committee chair did say that to me on my interview with him, that basically the majority of the league's wins came from in league. And so they essentially used that against them. I have a major issue with that because they seem to treat the Mountain West separately from the rest of the leagues. And that thinking did not apply A to A across the board everywhere else. So, I feel like the committee should be held to task here. Is it atrocious? No, but there are some matchups that are an outrage. And New Mexico against Clemson, what's that line up to, right? I honestly don't know, but I know that they're a favorite, and Clemson got absolutely – this is the thing. You hurt the other team, man. Clemson should not have to play New Mexico as a first-round game. That is a 6 versus 8. Like, and it's not a 6-11, I'll tell you that much. Rant over.
Yeah, I think they did okay picking the teams because once the bubble shrank, as somebody who was sitting here in the same hotel room this afternoon, really putting pen to paper and looking through it, I was like, Jesus, I don't know what to do here. Like, it got to the final. Like, it was like, I got about 6 teams and I got 3 spots and I guess I'll go here, here, and here. But man, I could easily see somebody else going with these other 3. That part of the job got hard. Picking the last at larges got really hard for them, I assume, because it was hard for me. And I sat with Jerry Palm all day. I know it was hard for him. The seeding is inexplicable. And I'm not the guy who comes on every year and says, they don't know how to seed this thing, but they really messed up the seeding. And we'll get to more of that stuff later. But the biggest example of that is just to circle right back to the top. I guess I thought you should be a 1. You're actually a 2. Perhaps that's not the biggest example because I thought Florida Atlantic could maybe be out and they got an 8.
Dude,
I thought they could maybe be
out. I thought Michigan State could be out, but yeah, FAU is an 8.
So maybe Iowa State isn't the biggest problem in terms of seeding, but it's the one at the top of the bracket that is most noticeable. And I promise we'll move on, but I just want to put a button on this. As you were talking through Iowa State, you said things like, you know, outside of the league, they did this and this. I don't care what they did outside of the league any more than what I care they did inside of the league. All the selection committee tells me every year, you know what they tell USF? You know what they tell South Florida? They say, we don't care what you did in your league. That doesn't
matter. Your body of work.
It's your whole body of work. How can you look at South Florida and stress that the only thing that matters is your entire body of work and then turn around and look at Iowa State and say, we're going to make you eighth in the pecking order because of your non-league strength of schedule? If you were really talking about big body of work, total body of work, why wouldn't you look at total strength of schedule? At which point, Iowa State's in the top 20 in America, higher than North Carolina. I understand that non-league strength of schedule is a part of the selection process. It is now my life's goal, mission, to get it removed. It doesn't belong there. Judge people on what they accomplish. And guess what? If somebody doesn't schedule aggressively, and then because of that, they don't accomplish much, and you leave them out of the tournament, then say, you know what? You probably should have scheduled more aggressively, and then maybe you'd have given yourself better opportunities. Leave that up to the coaches. And if coaches are smart enough to think they know how to game the system now, let them give it a try. Yeah. Let them give it a try.
Yeah, that. I don't want to get us too off the sidetrack, but I saw a little bit of that going out there tonight. The idea that you can that you now want to schedule 9 Patsies and are going to beat them by 28 points, just see how that goes for you.
Go do it.
Just see how that goes. That is way easier said than done. And oh, by the way, Oklahoma's not in the field. Okay, Oklahoma fell victim to this as well, and I have no issue with Oklahoma not making the field. So there is no, you know, skeleton key to getting this done.
No.
You want to schedule terribly? Like, it will absolutely backfire on 9 teams out of 10.
That's exactly right. Like, everybody thinks they've got the secret tool now. Like, we figured out. And if they're going to gain the system, we'll gain the system. You know what? If you think Iowa State beating everybody in the non-league by a million is, quote, gaming the system, like, just, okay, maybe they made that look easy. You know what else they made look easy? Beating Houston by 20. All right? Maybe none of this stuff is as easy as Iowa State makes it look. But if you want to go try it, go try it. I don't care. I just think once we get into the room and we're picking this bracket and we're seeding it, non-league strength of schedule runs counter to everything they say is supposed to be important. They are literally taking a fraction of your season and emphasizing it, and then literally in the next press saying, well, don't just tell us about your conference record. Don't just tell us about where you finished in your conference. Don't just tell us about your last 10 games. We look at the entire thing. Well, then why are you punishing Iowa State for this not entire thing? Rant over. I just think it's ridiculous. Iowa State will get wherever they were going to get no matter what, I guess. But for them to be ranked eighth by the selection committee, mm-hmm. is just, there's literally nobody else on the planet who could evaluate resume sensibly.
It's truly like
nobody would have the mate.
I didn't realize. So, you know, I'm on the set, I'm watching, I'm on the air, but we got the way it's pocketed. Like, occasionally I get like 3 minutes to watch the selection show and the feed coming from headquarters there. And I just assumed Iowa State was the number 1-2. And so it's like 45 minutes in. And then I was like, I didn't believe it, man.
No.
I was like, the last 2 seed, it was closer to the 3 line than the 1 line.
No, it's truly wrong.
Truly mind-boggling.
It's just wrong. It's just wrong, and a decision made by people who were either not focused enough or clearly focused on the wrong things. I'll let them figure it out. Let's move on from the top of the bracket to the bottom of the bubble. Did the Big East get screwed? All the Big East coaches think so. Let's get into that next. But first, a word from our partners.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, dead leg. One of the big storylines from the bracket reveal was that the Big East only got three bids. You okay with it? I actually understand. I disagree with it, but I understand it. It's not crazy.
Well, going into this, and this is another one of our questions right now. If you're listening, the poll question for tonight's episode is what's your biggest gripe? And the four options that are in there are MSU, Michigan State, and FAU seeding situation, the three biggest teams not getting in, Iowa State being a two seed, and where, or the Mountain West seeding. Again, we'll update those results in a little bit here. And Saturday at the Big East tournament, I'm like looking at all these resumes, and it was, I mean, you can do a taffy pull on Seton Hall versus Providence versus St. John's versus Seton Hall versus Providence. And I did think that one was going to squeak in. I thought it would be the Johnnies. I was wrong. How about the fact that St. John's and Providence weren't even in the first four out? Weren't even close. Now, I didn't think, I have to go back. I had the prediction earlier. I didn't think Providence would be in the first four out. St. John's is one a lot of people missed on overall. So what we have here is UConn is a one, Marquette is a two, Creighton on the three line. That's it. And that marks only the second time since the tournament expanded that the Big East only has three teams in the field. And that was in 93, I believe, was the other time that happened there. And Seton Hall fans got to really be, you know, have their ass chapped at this, because they were pretty close. They were a 13-win team in the second best conference in the country at KenPom, and they still didn't break in. They had the wins over St. John's. Like, I can get why that they were prioritized there. But it is kind of wild that you have this disparity where the number two team, again, per KenPom, gets only three into the field. And this predictably had, you know, some cascading effects. St. John's will not play in the NIT. Knight's been insane. I don't. Is Providence? Are they going? Did they all boycott the NIT? Or is
I
it just
believe I believe Providence is playing in the NIT.
Okay. I think I saw Seton Hall is as well. Chat can lift us up there. But yeah, last four in: Boise State, Colorado, Colorado State, Virginia. T-ball got it. The committee's got to be familiarized with the T-ball metric, because Virginia making this field, man. Are you kidding me?
I had them out.
I did too. I didn't think they should deserve to be in. Now, Oklahoma didn't surprise me. First four out: Oklahoma, Seton Hall, Indiana State, which, true or not, and I believe when the committee puts this out, this is actually how the votes tallied. I was highly confident that Indiana State would be right near that cut line, because mid-major, Missouri Valley, Drake getting a 10, by the way, kind of indicates that. And then Pitt. How about Pitt jumping the line? Bad non-con SOS. But jumping the line on Providence, St. John's. Well, Wake, I guess, was in there a little bit. Yeah, man, that was tough. And so that means conference total overall, and then it's all UGP. Big 12's got eight. SEC is eight. Big 10 is six. Mountain West has six. ACC with five. Pac-12 with four. Big East three. American, A-10, WCC with two apiece. Your highest teams in the net, not to get in, record setters this season. Again, we're all 6 years into the net. Indiana State at 29. St. John's at 32.
You know, Michigan State, Virginia are teams with questionable resumes that made the field. I think most people had Michigan State in, but not as easily as they got in. I think a lot of people had Virginia out. They get in. So you start looking at them and wonder, well, what did the committee see other than big brands and, you know, excellent national championship winning coaches? Because Michigan State is 9-14 in the first two quadrants, five games under 500 in the first two quadrants. And Virginia is 10-10 in the first two quadrants. So Michigan State's got more quadrant one wins. Virginia's got inferior computer numbers, but Virginia is 500 in the first two quadrants, where Michigan State is five games below 500 in the first two quadrants. The thing that they have in common, they're very clean in quadrant three and quadrant four. Michigan State is 10-0 in quadrant three, quadrant four. Virginia is 13-0 in quadrant three, quadrant four. It seems like maybe the best thing going for Michigan State and Virginia was that they took a lot of losses, but they didn't take quad three losses and quad four losses. And that seemed to save them on Selection Sunday.
I mean, Michigan State, I think, scheduled the way that it thought it needed to schedule to ensure itself to have some safety with all of this. I get that. I'm not cool with a 14-loss team getting to the ninth. I think it's a joke, frankly. I don't think they have any business near the nine line. Here are our poll results right now. What do you have the biggest issue with? Winning right now is the Mountain West at 31%. How the Mountain West got seeded and treated. It's close second, 29%, is three biggest teams, only three in the field. Third place is where MSU and FAU fell, and then last place is Iowa State being a two seed. That is interesting overall. Since we're talking bubble stuff with all this, yeah, the Mountain West getting two to Dayton is stunning, because Boise State popping up on the screen, and I did see the video. Did you see the video from the watch party when they had someone there watching, waiting for them to pop on the screen, and it was like they were watching a horror film, man. Yeah. It was like massive gasps when they realized that they barely got in and they had to go play at Dayton. I just don't get it. Now, I can't remember if I mentioned this on the pod or not, but there's been some good research by some folks in the past couple of years, and it got more attention as of late. The BPI has this weird altitude elevation bias that is against the Mountain West program. So if you go and check the Mountain West teams and where their BPI is relative to everyone else in the field and all the other team metrics, it's drastically lower. I think it's a real problem. They got six teams into the field. They would have only had five if New Mexico didn't win the auto bid. I've been raising hell about that on this pod. That's for damn sure if that had been the case. And you just across the board, you've got teams that are like San Diego State, I'm good with. Boise State should be nowhere near Dayton. I mean, that's an utter joke. Colorado State, I would argue, is the same. You can maybe sell me a little bit more on that. Nevada, a 10. I don't know. I was surprised on that. And the chat actually has the biggest issue with that overall. So your thoughts on Mountain West teams in the going in and Big East bubble, anything?
Take it. Shocked that New Mexico needed to win Saturday night to get in. I had them in safely. Utah State is an 8.
Come on, man. Are you kidding me? That's the one. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Purdue might have to play Utah State in the second round.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, and that's an outright conference champion of a league that got six bids, and they've got Great Osabor, who is a talented big. An 8 seed is outrageous for Utah State. And I know that the predictive metrics never loved them as much as I loved them, but yeah, there is no way you could put Utah State's resume up there without connecting it to a name, just like blind resume. You can, and I said, I'll give you $1,000. You can find 32. What do they get? An 8 seed? So what does that mean? You got to find 28 better than this. You can't find 28 better than Utah State's. You just can't. I know you know. I look at this stuff every morning. You cannot find 28 bodies of work better than Utah State's. It's outrageous. We had Danny Sprinkle on our show tonight, CBS Sports Network. He was great. And, he was like, yeah, we're a little surprised where we are, but we're just happy to have a seat at the table. And I was like, I know you're happy to have a seat at the table, but I think you got the wrong chair. They put you in the wrong chair. And I said, is that something you'll address with your team as motivation? He said, I'm still talking about us being picked ninth in the Mountain West preseason ball. So of course I'll use it. And he did. And I think this is important. Let's just say Houston goes out and loses in the round of 32 and Kansas gets upset by Samford and Texas Tech goes out early.
Oh boy.
Okay. Listen, here's what I'm saying. nobody is going to then write a column saying, is the Big 12 overrated? I mean, somebody might.
Oh, yeah. I think that might be coming.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I do think that's coming. Yeah.
Okay. It'd probably be a Virginia fan.
I think that is in the wind.
Maybe I talked myself into down a bad path there. You'll get the point I'm trying to make. There are things that can happen to leagues in this tournament where it isn't considered an indictment of the entire league. But if the Mountain West teams don't perform in this tournament, it'll be yes. Oh, God. Oh, that was cute how they just beat up on each other every Tuesday night at 1 a.m. on CBS Sports Network. And all of y'all like, you know.
Yes. You're leading to my point.
Yeah.
We just didn't have the time and the space and the real estate on HQ at any point tonight to get into this. But let's bring it up right now.
Yeah.
Because I understand. You got to win the games. The deck is stacked against the Mountain
West. That's right. Yes.
It is unquestionably stacked against. And it's a six-bid league. The thing is, it's not just that it's a six-bid league. The teams are legitimately very, very good. And they play entertaining basketball. My 1-68 went up on Sunday night, as it always does. And I try my best to basically power rank the field. A combination of how good I think they are, their talent, their coaching. But I do give recency bias to, like, how have you been trending them the past month or so? Here's why I have the Mountain West teams. I've got San Diego State the highest at 16, okay? And I think that's reasonable overall. From there, you go down, and I've got – then there's a cluster. Utah State, I've got at 25. I've got New Mexico as high as 30. Colorado State, 31. I've got Nevada, 35. Boise State, 36. Am I missing one more? I think I am still scrolling here, maybe. Or is that it? I might be missing one. But my point is this. To me, pretty much every team that got in – is top 35, 36 level overall. Nevada's in there as well. So I just think it's tough draws. I mean, Utah State as an 8 having to play Purdue. You got two teams that got to now get out of Dayton. San Diego State I have zero issue with. I actually thought SDSU got itself a nice little landing spot there. And then New Mexico's got to play Clemson and then might have to play Baylor. I don't want to hear anything about the Mountain West being overrated if the conference doesn't perform well. If we don't have a team win a game, sure. If we have one total win for the conference, all right, we can have the discussion. But I don't think that'll be the case. But if we look up and there's only one team that's into the Sweet 16, I think the seeding situation around it will have as much to do with that as anything else.
It's just the Mountain West is a league version of Gonzaga or old Memphis and CUSA, where people are just waiting to say that you were overrated or not as good as – whoever thought you were throughout the season. So, you know, when North Duke or North Carolina or, you know, Indiana or these big brands get upset in the tournament, it's just like a little story and we move on. But when Gonzaga gets upset in the tournament, it's an indictment on the entire 2 months prior that they've spent in the West Coast Conference. And so the Mountain West will have to deal with that backlash if it comes. And Danny, I asked him about this. He said, absolutely. Like, that's a real thing. As a league, we have to perform or else it'll be used against us. You could argue that it was used against him on Selection Sunday. The idea that they're just not really what it is, the human polls and, you know, what this entire season has told us. But if they don't perform in this tournament, then it'll be a storyline. So, you know, I wish them luck. FAU, I just want to spend, because we're talking bubble teams, and I know they weren't on the bubble, but I don't know why they weren't. I mean, they got an 8 seed. Norlander, like, I just let me walk you through this real quick and then explain.
Let's do it.
And keep in mind, I used to be an owl. I used to be an owl. Now I'm a Boilermaker.
That's right.
I'm now a Boilermaker, but I used to be an owl at one point in my life.
I believe you had this team top 5 preseason.
So, that's important to point out. I ain't your FAU hater. I was the biggest FAU believer. And I still, like, you know, I still got them in the round of 32 at least. Let's see what happens. But they're 2-2 in quadrant 1, 8-3 in quadrant 2. So 10-5 in the first two quadrants. That's great. But they,
if you stop there, all right, I'm on board.
They're great. That's like 8-seed stuff. I'm with you. But then you got to keep going. They only have 2 quadrant 1 wins. They have 3 losses outside of the first two quadrants. They have a quadrant 3 loss to Temple just the other day. They have quadrant 4 losses, 2 of them. 1 to Florida Gulf Coast, 1 to Bryant. A number 8 seed we've already established with multiplication tables. That's top 32 in the country. Top 32 in the country. That's what an 8 seed represents. FAU isn't in the top 32 of any computer you can find. Not one. You can't find one. They don't. So what are we doing? They don't have great wins. They have lots of bad losses, and they don't have strong computer numbers. How do you get an 8 from that? You ready for this? I mean this sincerely, and I love Dusty May. All right? I want this part to be in the podcast. I love Dusty May. I look forward to his introductory press conference, wherever it is. All right? I can't wait for that. All right?
Won't be Ohio State, by the way, out of nowhere. That's a different show, though.
It won't be Ohio State. But I look forward to his introductory press conference, wherever it is. Florida Atlantic should have been closer to out than an 8.
Yes.
And it's not even debatable. This is where the committee, like Wally Zerbiak, who is my friend, I love him to pieces. He constantly is like, oh, you little KenPom nerds. Like he doesn't, he's very much a basketball, player, right?
I
appreciate it because he'll like,
for sure.
I like that he doesn't get into the numbers and he just wants to watch it and analyze. I like that. But anyway, tonight, even Wally was like, why don't they have people like you and Rothstein on this committee? And I don't want to be on the committee. Like that, he wasn't being, but what
sure,
he,
bro.
But what he meant was, my God, even to me, this seems crazy. Some of these seedings, and they don't see, and they don't seem to know what they're talking. Cause we get a chance to talk to these people and we ask, go back and watch the interviews. We ask them all these questions. They never answer nothing. They never answer anything. I have never, if you ask them one question about a number one seed or on the bubble or seeding, they will never give a coherent, convincing answer. Never. They just talk and they cherry pick things. And if you ever had a, like, I wish we would stop doing, because the way we do these committee chair interviews, it's like four people. And it's like, all right, you ask one question, then 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 we'll do it again. And then we're out. I would rather see that with just one-on-one follow-ups. Like, hey, okay. Hey, I just asked you how FAU got an eight seed. Cause I did. And you just spoke for 45 seconds and you said nothing. You didn't answer it at all. So, hey, can we revisit that? Tell me again what you saw in FAU. It ain't the big wins. It ain't the lack of bad losses because they got a ton of those. It ain't the big wins because they don't have many of those. It ain't the computer numbers because they ain't top 32 in any computer that most people look at. So what are you looking at that gave you an 8 seed there? Like we don't get to follow up like that, but they don't give suitable answers because they can't because in some cases they're just they don't know.
There's no defending it. Who would have ever thought that we have reached the point where it would, you just can't help but look at a bracket and say, wow, MSU and FAU getting legacy seeding based off of reputation. What are we doing here? There's a lot of people in the chat that are commenting that they think it's the worst seeding job they've ever seen. I'm not going to go that far, but what my big takeaway on this is, we had bid thieves across the board, and I do love bid thieves because it adds stakes to building up to selection, something that I love. But unfortunately, this committee was not equipped enough to handle the cut line raising to a level that I can't recall every damn year. But I just don't think there have been more than two or three years since I've really been following this and like following it for like 22, 23 years pretty intensely. I think this was almost one of the most competitive bubbles I've ever seen. I knew it would lead to some wildly off predictions because that was going to be inevitable. But the way it happened, like, still blew my mind. It still blew my mind. And the committee needs to diversify. I have said this or written this for a long time. It has only ever been comprised of conference commissioners and athletic directors. And I understand why. It's the NCAA tournament. It's run by the NCAA. You need to have two, three, four different kinds of voices on that committee that who are intelligent, play the game, associated with the game. It can be, you could put freaking Ken Pomeroy on the committee. And Ken Pom, by the way, has been on the record multiple times saying, no, don't use my system to seed your tournament. You should be doing resume-based inclusion, but you know, use that to give you an indication of where teams are if it comes to, you know, or selection more than seeding. But the committee was out of its depth here in a way that I frankly didn't think was going to happen. And I would expect, and this is from talking to a few folks with the NCAA, I would expect, like, moving forward, we might get a few tweaks here and there with the process. If not next year, pretty soon. They should really have a review on this. I know there's plenty of Patino kill the net. I get all that. The net's not a power ranking. I understand. And I agree. Like, there should be some tweaks. The net's been shrouded. It's a black box. The quads, they have cutoffs and all that stuff. use strength of record more, use wins above bubble. I think there will be a real dialogue about introducing that stuff in the years to come.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
You touched on this earlier, but it is interesting that there are multiple ways to break this thing down and conclude that UConn, despite being the overall number one seed, could theoretically have the toughest path.
I don't think there's an argument against it as it lands now. When they play the games, it might be different.
Well, I guess what I would always say is we always lay out these paths and then you don't know. I mean, they could be playing, you know, who knows who in the Sweet 16. So, like, you never know exactly what a path looks like, but if you take their path at its most extreme, it appears to be the most difficult path on the way to Glendale, Arizona. I'll run you through it next. First, one more word from our partners.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
All right, Norlander, there's a million ways to do this. One way that I went and just looked at the four regions is I took the top four seeds in each, because that's usually what we're talking about when we talk about tough roads. It's like, who would you have to play in the Sweet 16? Who would you have to get in the Elite Eight? Maybe a round of 32 game can be problematic every once in a while. But if you're a one seed, history says you're going to get out of those 1-8 or 1-9 games at a pretty nice clip. So what I did, just as I was sitting around waiting on you to get off HQ, is I like being the one waiting around on you sometimes. You're usually the one.
It is a script flip. There's no doubt about it. But on that note, if you haven't seen yet, I went through my entire bracket, and I very much appreciate the fact that they basically build the show around my picks and doing that. So it's an awesome opportunity. But we did run a little bit late here. Yes.
It's all fine. It's all fine. I'm good. I ain't going to bed no time soon. So I went and I took the KenPom rankings for the top four seeds in each region. And if you do that in the East,
give it to me.
Okay. And then, so UConn's the one and is number one at KenPom. So that's easy. Yep. That's the way it should be. And everything after that is not the way it should be. Iowa State's the two seed in the East, but fifth at KenPom. All right.
Crazy.
Illinois is the third seed in the East, but 10th at KenPom.
Okay.
And Auburn's the fourth seed in the East, fourth at KenPom.
Crazy.
So if you add it up, let's just do it this way. And it's only one way to do it, but it's an easy way to do it. You add up the 2, 3, and 4. So for the East, it's 5, 10, and 14. You've got 19. UConn's 2, 3, and 4 seed add up to 19 at KenPom. Are you following me here? Does this make any sense to you?
I do. Yes, I understand math. Continue.
Okay. I never know when these numbers are going to get too weird. North Carolina's the one seed in the West. All right. They're ninth at KenPom. You ready for this? Arizona's the two seed in the West, sixth at KenPom. Do you realize that if North Carolina and Arizona played on a neutral court, there's a chance Arizona's going to be favored in that game as the two seed?
How about that? And that's also Caleb Love from former team. We'll see if we get there.
Baylor's the three seed, 14th at KenPom. Alabama's the four seed, 13th at KenPom. So UNC as the fourth number one seed.
Yep.
They're 2, 3, and 4 in the West region adds up to 33.
33. Again, I'm writing this down on my bracket. The other one's 19?
19.
Okay, keep going.
Now we're in the South. Houston's the two, and they're the one seed in the South. They're second at KenPom. Marquette's the two seed, 12th at KenPom. Kentucky's the three, 19th at KenPom. Yeah. Duke is the four, 8th at KenPom. So in the South, the two, three, and four add up to 39. Now we're in the Midwest.
Song, by the way, keep going.
Now we're in the Midwest. Purdue is the one seed, third at KenPom. Tennessee's the two seed, 7 at KenPom. Creighton's the three seed, 11 at KenPom. Kansas is the four seed, 22 at KenPom. The 2-3-4 adds up to 40. So the East, 2-3-4 with UConn adds up to 19. The West, 2-3-4 with UNC adds up to 33. The South, 2-3-4 with Houston adds up to 39. And the Midwest with Purdue, the 2-3-4 add up to 40. That's only one way to do it, but in that way, it does make it clear. If UConn has to go through a bracket that unfolds as it should relative to seeding, UConn will play what KenPom at least says is the toughest schedule on its way to Arizona, which is just another obvious seeding flaw.
Not only that, San Diego State's the highest rated team from a six-bid league. It's the five, and it's 21 at KenPom. And BYU is the six. It is 16. It's just not arguable. The East is the most loaded region. It is so overloaded. Again, I just want to know, do they take a moment in that room and just look at it and absorb it and say, and give themselves time to tweak if need be, and just say, all right, will our bracketing principles allow us to just, again, send Iowa State to any other damn region, please? UConn has the toughest road. I would say if I'm ranking the regions by toughness for the one, I would go now it would actually from the top four, purely from a KP perspective, it's the West, but on balance, looking up and down everything here, I actually would go East one. I think Midwest is two. South is three and the West is four. I overall strength, every seat accounted for. Give me East, Midwest, South, West for the roads for the team. So that is UConn with the toughest, Purdue with the second toughest, Houston with the third toughest, and then North Carolina conceivably with the easiest. That's my read, but at the very top of it, UNC actually comes in second place.
I agree with you. East toughest in theory. I like Purdue's possible path.
They might have to play Utah State in the second round.
I know, and I'm part Aggie, and I'm part Boilermaker, so this is going to be real tough for me.
Yeah,
I mean that's going to be like I'm going to have to show up like Jason Travis Kelsey's mom. Okay. You know, I'm going to feel like Donna Kelsey.
Right down the middle.
Yeah, I'm going to feel like Donna Kelsey that night. I'm going to show up in my Donna Kelsey outfit, split right down the middle. I'm half Aggie, I'm half Boilermaker. I used to be Al.
Okay.
And I was once a peacock, but right now I'm
peacocks back in the dance. By the way, here we go. Right now, my board, or you get the sound.
Right now, I'm half Aggie and I'm half Boilermaker. This is gonna be very tough for me. But like, I love Utah State, but like, come on, Purdue, you're just gonna have to beat Utah State. You get to the round of the Sweet 16, rather. Okay, you got a Kansas team that's been banged up and has no depth. It's still Kansas and Bill Self, but they've been banged up and they have no depth. Or a Gonzaga team that was a little uneven until the last month or so. And then, like, you know, Samford and McNeese State, I guess, are also options. But, like, you know, if you're Purdue and you're in the Sweet 16 playing a Samford or a McNeese State, then just, you know, feel fortunate and handle your business. And then in the Elite Eight, you know, a Creighton team that is good and dangerous, but, you know, Purdue has been ahead of Creighton in the computers all year long. And the other option there would be the two seed Tennessee. And I like Tennessee. I've got Tennessee in the Elite Eight. But, you know, you do have Rick Barnes' NCAA tournament track record there to provide some confidence for it. I just think if I'm Purdue, I'm looking at this and I'm going, there's nothing that we can't handle in front of us. Let's go to the Final Four. That looks like a very doable Final Four path.
I do like potentially Purdue gets Gonzaga. Or well, here's the deal on this. And again, we're going to have Monday show, CBS Sports Network 2 Eastern, hour long, a Tuesday hour long. Those are both going to go in the feed, and then you're getting another Wednesday show that's going to be a doozy for you here. But just quickly looking at that, Gonzaga McNeese will be a popular 12 over 5. Will Wade versus Mark Few is hilarious, by the way, because Mark Few has been outspoken about, you know, clean coaches and dirty coaches, and the fact that he's got to go up against a Will Wade team that's really, really good. Fascinating there. And then Kansas Samford, you know, Samford, they press every possession. Kansas has no bench.
That's going to be the tricky one. Like, keep an eye on that one. Yes. I put Kansas ahead of my, but
I pick Samford.
Kansas is hurt. Even when they're healthy, they have no depth, and Samford's going to try to make you tired.
It's a fascinating game because I don't know how healthy McCullough and Dickinson are. And I'm telling you, Bucky McMillan, they press every time. They get up and down the floor. They love shooting the three. Now, that can really go haywire on you, but if you're on, look out for it. But the point I'm making is this. If Purdue winds up with any of those four, Gonzaga, McNeese, Kansas, Samford, I think that works out well for – I know I'm talking about Purdue. Sweet 16, and then the bottom half, depending on who breaks through there, you're looking at Tennessee – Creighton. I did my bracket on HQ on Sunday because we got to get it out. We got to get these picks out. But as always, I do make some tweaks here. I'm more disgusted than usual because go ahead and look at the past years. You're getting double digit sweeps into the second weekend. You're getting 5, 6, 7, 8 into the Final Four. I'm having a hard time trying to talk myself into it. I am with you with Purdue, though. And my advice here, and I'll probably say it on the Monday or Tuesday show on CBS Sports Network, I actually think that Purdue is a good value pick to win the national championship because so many people in your office pool will not pick them, and they are good enough to win it all. I understand. You got the snark. You got to see it. You can fade them. They might not do it. Heck, they might lose before the first weekend. But to me, heading in before we play the game, and I love this beautiful bracket because we think we know everything, and it's all going out the window by dinner time on Thursday night. Purdue has a healthy chance to actually live up to expectations with the National Player of the Year, a better roster than last season, and – I'd give it a good long thought there. What else you got for me, GP?
I was just going to see if you could wave that paper and snap it right in front of the microphone again.
You want that? I got it for you.
Oh, yeah. That sounds good when you do that.
Love a good clean bracket here. Come on now.
Hey, before we get out of here.
Yeah, what's up?
Let's do our Final Four picks.
You want to do this now?
Yes.
All right, I'll give them to you, but I really might change this by Monday.
I don't care.
Okay. You want to go for – how about that? All right, you want to go – your four, my four, or region by region?
Why do you want to go region by region?
Okay, let's go east and clockwise. So I vowed to myself, and I will not change this. You will not have me change this. And we got the same one. I said, when after seeing UConn do everything it did, I didn't care what region it went in. Lo and behold, it's in the toughest one. I'm taking UConn to get to Arizona. I will be seeing them in person in Brooklyn. They're going to open in Brooklyn. I got him going there. I can't. I'm just, if they lose, more power to it. The team that does it, this tournament's amazing. Upsets galore. I welcome it all. I am not picking against that team winning four games minimally.
Me neither. I think they have the hardest path to the Final Four, theoretically. I just think they're so much better than everybody else in that region. I'll take them anyway. And I say this as somebody who thinks Iowa State should have been the fourth number one seed. But I say this as somebody who thinks there's clear separation between the top three and everybody else. And yes, I watched Iowa State Houston this weekend. Mm-hmm. I just think UConn is – they're just better. They're just better. I'd be – how about this? If I told you yes or no, a week paycheck, UConn's in the Final Four. That's it. Just not championship.
Yes,
just,
I would take yes.
I think I would say yes too. We'll both go UConn in the East. All right, let's take it down to the West then.
All right, you go first this time.
I got Baylor.
Oh, look at you. Okay. I'm going to hold you to account on that with something, but give me why are you going to take Baylor to get out of there instead of UNC the three? I mean, excuse me, UNC the one, Zona the two, Bama the three, or Bama the four, excuse me.
I'm holding the selection committee against North Carolina.
Okay.
They have to pay the price for the selection committee misseeding this thing. Arizona's just I think this is the most wide open. Would you agree with that? And maybe it should be because it's the fourth number one seed.
By the nature of it being the weakest region in my estimation, I do think it's the most wide open.
Yeah, Baylor's got 10 quadrant one wins. That is more than – that's as many as anybody besides – Purdue, Houston, and UConn. Iowa State also has 10. But Iowa State and Baylor are tied for fourth in the country with quadrant one wins. They have 10 each. And then if you look at Baylor, like, what do you need to, like, go? I mean, you can get to the Final Four with any cast of any, like, there is no, like, well, what does it usually take to get to the Final Four? Like, you can find whatever you're looking for, you can find it. They've got experience. They've got a national championship coach. They've clearly shown they can win big games this year. They've got 10 quadrant one wins. They've got at least two first round picks on the team.
Yep.
So they got NBA talent. They got experience. They got a championship winning coach. They've proven over and over again they can beat good people. In what I believe to be a wide open West, why not just go with Baylor? If I'm trying not to take four number one seeds or all ones and twos, give me Baylor in the West.
I'm disgusted with my Final Four, but I have Arizona as the two coming out of here. I'll take Zona. Tommy Lloyd snaps his, you know, it's not really much of a thing, but it's been 2 years. Top two seeds haven't made it to the second weekend yet. Have them doing it there. This is in part because although I picked this on HQ, I actually think I'm going to have New Mexico play in the Sweet 16. I haven't decided. I've got Baylor right now, but I might have New Mexico. I might do this against the selection. I might do this. I'm sticking it to him is what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm sticking it to him. All right. I'm a wily old sailor right now. That's what I am. I'm going to take him. All right. I'll take New Mexico to get to the Sweet 16, and I'll take Zona to move on. And again, these might be subject to some tweaks. We'll explain the brackets later in the week. But as it stands right now, I got the Gales in the Elite Eight. So that's why I got Zona moving on to the Final Four, beating St. Mary's. Again, subject to some slight changes and adjustments overall. I'll scoot on over to the Midwest here. This is Purdue's region. You got Tennessee the two, Creighton the three, KU the four, and the Zags is the five. I have Purdue as the team getting out. I will sleep on this and try and decide by the time we tape on Monday at two, if I'm going to stick with Purdue. I genuinely believe that Purdue has the goods to do this and win at least four games, but I am tempted by both Creighton and Tennessee. If I don't stick with Purdue, it will either be the Jays or the Vols. But as of now, I'm banking on Matt Painter. I'm helpless. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing, but that's where I am. And you know what? Before you say it, I think you're with me.
Of course. I'm a bowler maker. I mean, I didn't have a Zach Edey jersey to throw on tonight on set like Jerry Palm did, but I'm a bowler maker.
Okay.
I'm starting to even look like a bowler maker, people are saying.
Well, starting at, I mean.
People say I look like a bowler maker. I look kind of like a bowler maker. Of course I've got Purdue going to the Final Four. What are you even talking about? I wouldn't even be able to look myself in the mirror if I'd pick somebody other than Purdue. I got Purdue, Tennessee in the Elite Eight. Zach Edey over Dalton Connect. And then we go to the South region.
Yeah.
Houston Cougars are your number one seed. Oh, they're coming off an ass whipping.
I mean, honestly, what in the hell happened? I mean, we don't need to break down the Saturday night game, but that was stunning. As stunning as seeing FAU as an eight seed, frankly. So this is why I hate myself. I have three ones and a two. I cannot and will not live with this. We have – last year we didn't get a single one seed to the Final Four. However, you know, UConn, Purdue, and Houston have elevated themselves all season long. So in the moment, I was prisoner to it, and I allowed myself to do this. But I just got to figure this out here, man. You got Houston as the one, Marquette as the two, Kentucky as the three, Duke as the four. And I don't trust Duke to win four games. Marquette will have Kolick back. Will he be at 190, 85, 82, 77.643%? Who the heck knows? So
How about this?
What?
Tonight on our show, we had Shaka Smart on.
Yeah.
And it was me and John Rothstein conducting the interview with Shaka Smart. Just me and John.
Okay.
And so John says, obviously, Tyler Kolick has been injured. Shaka, you have said that he will play in the NCAA tournament. Can you tell us if he will play in your first game in the NCAA tournament? And Shaka said, should I tell you now or tell you when you text me every day between now and then? And I had one of those moments where I like forgot I was on TV. So I just started laughing really loud.
And then my gosh. He hung him out. Yeah. He hung him out there.
Yeah, it was funny. And then John played it off. John was laughing. He was like, well, for our TV show, you know, it'd probably be best to do it right now. And honestly, I don't even know what Shaka said. I was laughing so hard. I don't even know what he said. But I did point out to Shaka. I said, Shaka, I had never had an oblique injury, perhaps because I don't move enough for that. But I Googled it. I was just like, what does that feel like? And I think I told you this. It literally says it feels like you're being stabbed by a knife.
Yes. We've gone over this. We have gone over this.
So I said, Shaka said, when he came, he said, Tyler's a tough guy. And when he came out of the game,
yeah,
I think it was the Providence game, he said, it hurts to breathe. And he said, that's when we knew he was in pain. He did say, I remember this part, he's not in pain anymore. The pain's gone. And so I do expect him to play in the round of 64. But that was just a little funny moment from TV tonight.
Real quick before we pick this game. So it was just an interesting – so Saturday night, Big East tournament, it ends UConn's East Marquette. And I didn't have time to go to the Shaka press conference, so I didn't see him until just the way it happened to work out. This was – I had a long time afterward. But as Hurley and the team – we're getting ready and bringing the trophy and going to the press conference in one way, and they had just walked in or they were just about to. Shaka's just got a backpack on. And if you've never been inside the bowels of MSG, it's hard to describe, but there's a long – when you leave, there's a long ramp to drive out, but the cars don't come up. Like, the team bus can't fit up there, so what happens is you got to walk down. And it was an interesting juxtaposition because I saw one man going to celebrate a Big East tournament championship, and the other man who did it a year ago, it's just Shaka. He's walking by himself. He's walking down the tunnel. I shook his hand. I said, tough one. He's like, yeah, but we'll be all right. And I said, Tyler's going to play on Thursday. He said, that's the plan. And it's just the results of these games can put these guys in such interesting moments right afterward. You got one guy celebrating a tournament title, another guy walking by himself, you know, 200 yards, 300 yards off to the bus. And who knows where they'll be a week from now. You know, will Shaka Smart, you know, I expect UConn to be in the Sweet 16. But I love this time of the year because there are these violent, violent swings. Shaka was walking out like a man confident and determined to do what needs to be done. Has not made the second weekend in any year of his career except the year he made the Final Four. It's on for Marquette this year. I think they're going to do it, but I will have Houston coming out of the South and getting to the Final Four.
I will have Marquette getting to the second weekend. I'll have Marquette getting to the Elite Eight. But I do have Houston getting out of the South and joining UConn, Baylor, and Purdue.
Okay.
In the Final Four.
Yeah, so we have the same 3-1s, and then you've got the 3 and I've got the 2. Ah, man. The lack of creativity is maddening, but give us some grace. Give us some
slack. It's so weird. Every time you do something like this, people will say, oh, bunch of junk. But like, what do you want us to do?
Look at the Final Four. Like, we should have learned our lesson by now. It's just hard to.
What do you mean do? You mean say Clemson? You're like, I got Clemson.
Yes, actually, I do. Can you? I got Clemson as a victim of New Mexico after what the committee did. So,
should I do Colgate? Would that make me sound interesting? If I said I think Colgate's going to the Final Four,
we will give you our picks. You got Sunday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday show. We're coming at you hot. I think we got shows literally like 8-9 days in a row here. So there'll be no lack of content. I think that's about it because, I mean, what the heck? I might as well promote this now because this is supposed to be happening. I think it's for YouTube only, but CBS has a deal with Pearl Jam. I can't believe this is about to happen. CBS has a deal with Pearl Jam, and there's a new Pearl Jam album coming out, and there's going to be songs that are used on commercial breaks. So they came to me like a week ago, and they're like, hey, do you want to interview Pearl Jam for the podcast? Oh, no. Do you ever do podcast guests? No, we don't do podcast guests. Well, Pearl Jam wants to do an interview. Do you want to do it? And keep in mind, Pearl Jam is one of my five legitimately
Pearl Jam's
five
a band. Bands. Like, who the human? Is it Eddie Vedder or is it the drummer?
Well, that's the thing. And so I was like, am I getting Vedder? And I knew I was. Now, I don't think so. But Jeff Ament, the bass player.
Okay, yes, he's a big deal. Hats, yeah.
He is a legitimate basketball fan. So I am scheduled to interview him in 6 minutes. So we need to wrap the pod. We are going to get his picks. And yes, I will talk about Pearl Jam. And that will be on the YouTube channel early Monday. And hey, why not? They came to me. Shouts to Pearl Jam. Dark Matter comes out in like 2 months. You bet your ass we're talking to Pearl Jam. So I'm nowhere close to being done, but that's a Sunday show.
Tell Jeff Ament, if you talk to him, tell him I too would rather be with an animal.
Oh, there we go. Oh, great running song. Animal. First five tracks off of Versus. Great running. Great running.
You tell that, Jeff Ament. I sure did enjoy Versus. Oh, 10, 10 might have changed my 14-year-old life, but I really enjoyed Versus as well. Hey, have a fun conversation.
I will.
I'll be sitting here doing something else. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. Legend. Shouts to Huck. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Pearl Jam. Shouts to Mookie Blaylock. If you're not subscribed to...
Shouts to Stone Gossard. Just a great rhythm guitar player. I can go on, but I got to
stop. Shouts to Stone Gossard. If you're not subscribed, subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. It's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments.
Do I need to ask Jeff Amen if he's in us, or is it presumed?
I mean, presumed.
Presumed. Okay.
I mean, presumed.
Okay.
He's a part of the Seattle grunge scene.
There we go.
Assumed.
By the way, I slipped in, and we got to wrap this up, but you're not going to find it. I don't even know if it's on VOD, but I slipped in a tremendous More of Us at one point on the set, and Hakeem Dermish knew what I was doing. I did it toward Tim Doyle. He had no idea what was going on. It was tremendous, but if you were watching and recognize it, shout out.
All right. We will talk. Hey, we'll be back real soon.
Very
2
soon.
O'clock Eastern on Monday afternoon, CBS Sports Network. It'll be honestly a lot like this show, except shorter.
Yes. But we'll mix in some stuff, all right?
But yeah, you know, we'll figure. Hey, it'll be just like this, except shorter and hopefully better. We'll talk to you. 2 o'clock, CBS Sports Network. See you then. Till then, take care.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.